Welcome to Close Up with Art Kaplan. This is a interview program where we talk to leaders in the field of healthcare. And I'm very excited today to have Dr. Judith Korner with me, who runs the Weight Management Center at Columbia University Medical Center, where she's also a professor of medicine. Mm-hmm. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, this topic I dread and yet I'm super interested in. I battle weight issues. I've got lots of friends who battle weight issues. So having the chance to talk to someone who really deals with these issues, I think will be of great interest, not just to me, but to our viewership. Certainly obesity and weight are big health issues. Tell me a little bit about your research.
Well, I'm overall trying to figure out why it is people are hungry and how it is that they get full. Because I think what we're learning is that appetite is really regulated, you know. So if we were to order a pizza here today, there would be...
And that would be good. But
that
would be
very good. You know, one slice might be okay to satisfy one person, and another person might need to eat half the pizza. And it's not always that the one slice person is exercising willpower. It just means that they may be getting signals that the
chemical
other person...
Chemical signals, hormonal signals,
signals from the gut. We're learning the gut is like an endocrine organ, and, you know, you eat and it sends out hormones that actually talk to the brain.
I'm full, I'm not full, I
exactly,
want some more.
Exactly. So there are cues as to when you should be hungry, how much food does it take you to be full. And that's a really huge interest of mine and what I'm trying to figure out. The idea is that if we could figure that out, then we could maybe do target therapies.
You know, we hear so much these days about obesity, research into obesity. Do we really understand why people are overweight?
We're starting to. I should say that there's been a huge shift in the field probably since the past 20 years when a hormone was discovered called leptin, and it's made in fat tissue, and it talks to the brain also to tell the brain how much fat it has. And since that, we've now discovered dozens of other hormones, some coming from the stomach, some coming from the intestine, the fat tissue.
Right, I think they're coming from every part of me and my own body, but yes, I understand. So lots of signaling centers.
Lots of signaling centers. And what we're trying to do is to understand how those signaling centers work. And probably people are obese or they eat for different reasons. And where their signaling centers may be off, you know, we're trying to figure that out.
You know, everywhere I go, people are talking about genes and their relationship to obesity. Are we paying too much attention to genetics when we start thinking about causes of obesity?
So I have a 16-year-old son, and I can assure you he thinks that mothers are to blame for everything. Okay. But having said that, I think genetics...
Has he published that in a scientific journal yet?
One day.
Mothers are too...
So I think that, you know, genetics is a strong contributor to people's body weights, anywhere from probably 50 to 80%. We're just trying to figure out which genes are involved. There are some cases where we can clearly identify a mutant gene, for example, in the... you know, leptin receptor. But those cases are really small. So most likely it's a group of different genes that together in this environment will have someone eat more, you know, and become obese. You know, the genes were around eons ago, you know, pretty much the same genes. Then they probably, you know, contributed to survival, because those individuals who could hold on to body fat in times of famine would be the ones to survive. Whereas now, when we, you know, in developed countries, the famine isn't necessarily an issue. But if you have those genes and you go to any drugstore to buy a pack of tissues, but next to the tissues mm-hmm. are the candy bars, you know. You may go for the candy bar.
Right,
also.
I'm always concerned that famine is coming when I
right exactly.
So there are some rare genetic diseases that do seem to be closely associated with overeating, with putting on weight. Do they have anything to teach us about obesity for the average person?
So there are conditions that are genetically based that do drive overeating. For example, Prader-Willi syndrome. That causes excessive hyperphagia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we do know that one of the hunger hormones is increased with that. There's also a mutation in what we call the melanocortin 4 receptor. So that's in the hypothalamus, and that receives signals to suppress appetite, increase energy expenditure. And that is probably the most common gene that we know of being linked to early onset obesity. Depending on the study, its prevalence is probably between 4% and 6% of the population. The rest of the population, pretty much, we're really not sure what the genetic bases are for driving the obesity.
So let me ask a different question. Sometimes it's said we spend too much or put too much attention on the genetics and the heredity. I once did a count mm-hmm. when I was driving home when I lived in Philadelphia into the burbs. I went by 11 fast food outlets on my way home. They're everywhere. We have enormous portions. If somebody comes here from Europe, they think we're having a single meal for a week. You know, there's enough food on the plate. Are we in a culture that makes us fat?
Yeah. You know, some people term this an obesogenic environment. And in fact, if you look at restaurant menus, the average meal in a restaurant is now 4 times greater in calories than a meal, let's say, in the 1950s.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And our portions have just gone way out of control. You know, if you go to a movie theater for 25 cents more, you can get, like,
right,
the soda.
Super size, yeah,
right, you
yeah.
can get the bathtub of
yes,
soda,
yes.
you know, instead of the small container of soda. So the environment is really, really important.
I mean, is that a war that medicine can win? You know, you got the Colonel and Ronald and the Burger King on one end, and then you and an apple on the other side. Can we really win this fight?
I hope we can. I think that it is really overwhelming, but we need to keep going on with the battles, and I think every little battle that we win will eventually get to where our environment is healthier. You know, certainly there is more awareness now in, you know, public schools and, you know, trying to get healthier mm-hmm. vending machines. Mm-hmm. And
you support that, get some of the sodas out of the schools kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. And but there also has to be parental education, you know, so the school
I mean,
can,
do we really have to teach people how to eat? Is that an important thing
yes.
to pay attention to?
Absolutely. We really do. I mean, there needs to be more nutritional education, and it has to be from all the family members. We probably, as physicians, maybe need to learn a little bit more about nutrition. Right now, what happens is if we have an overweight or obese patient, you know, a lot of people, a lot of physicians don't even address that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, a very sensitive
mm-hmm.
topic.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we do, you know, we say, well, you have to lose 30 pounds. But no one is helping that person figure out how they're going to lose the 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I'll just tell a story on myself. I've been losing a couple of pounds a month for the past year or so. And the way my doctor manages me, who mm-hmm. likes to eat a lot, is I see him a lot. I mean,
yeah.
we just do check-ins and sort of, you know, how they're doing, take your weight, got to be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be one strategy, is just more frequent
yes.
checking and support that way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of data out there, actually, to support what you have just said. Mm-hmm. Accountability, support, support from many different sources. And each person is a little bit different. So some people might like a group setting. Some people uh-huh. might like an individual setting.
So you've got to figure out what they respond to.
You really do. You know, I think, unfortunately, there's very little time in doctors' practices to devote to nutrition, education.
Mm-hmm. Although obesity is such a big health issue, you'd think.
Right, right. You know, if you could tackle that, you know, you may not need to tackle as much the high blood pressure, mm-hmm. the high blood mm-hmm. sugar, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. sleep apnea. You know, we've gotten quite good at tackling the comorbid conditions of obesity, but we haven't gotten that good in tackling the obesity itself, either in terms of treatment or in terms of prevention.
I want to come back to that, but I want to ask you a little personal question. How did you get into this area? Why this area for you?
I just find it fascinating. I mean, my training is really as a molecular biologist. So I, you know, just thought how we control appetite is, from a scientific point of view, extremely fascinating.
So pure science. You weren't somebody interested in body shape or modeling or fashion in high school or something? No.
Although I did take a couple of summer night courses doing illustration at FIT. But that's the extent of my fashion interest.
So you came right through the science.
It's really through the science. However, clinically, I also do find it fascinating working with patients. And some of the things, actually, that patients tell me do spur on questions for research. So, for example, a patient of mine had bariatric surgery. Mm-hmm. And what she told me, this was a number of years ago, was that she never used to feel full. She would eat mm-hmm. and eat until she felt the food was up to here, and it was sort of uncomfortable. She then had surgery, and, you know, she could eat much fewer calories, mm-hmm. and she feels full.
So remind us, as long as we got to the surgery side, so when is that appropriate to think about? When do we start thinking about, it's not going to be behavior change, it's going to be surgical?
Yeah. So, you know, we do start off with the most conservative approach. And clearly the cornerstone of therapy is behavior therapy and lifestyle management, nutrition management. If people really don't get to where they need to be in terms of their weight, then we may consider drugs. After that, if the drugs are not effective or not effective enough, or if there are contraindications for those drugs, then we move on to the next step, which would be surgery. And really, the idea with the surgery isn't, you know, so you look good in a bikini. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of the surgery is to improve your metabolic health. You know, there also may be some psychological issues there, too, and self-esteem. But it really is the driver being that it's for your health. Mm-hmm. And we do consider it, you know, there are body mass index criteria
for surgery. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, and this may be a good point, when are you, as a doctor, worried about somebody's weight? What's considered fat?
Right, well, the definition of obesity is an excess of body fat, which we don't necessarily measure, although we do measure waist circumference, mm-hmm. and that measure...
Those little calipers.
Yeah. but even a simple tape measure.
And just waist size?
Just waist. And there are parameters for that, because the size of your waist does reflect your health, you know, and your risk for cardiovascular disease. Otherwise, we use the body mass index, which is a number that you can get by plugging in your height and your weight.
I see.
And then there are categories.
So 200 pounds at 6'6" isn't 200 pounds at 5'1".
Exactly. Right. So then we use that as guidelines for surgery. But we also take into account the overall health. So, you know, two people who have, let's say, a body mass index of 40, which clinically is considered morbid obesity, but one person has diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, sleep apnea, osteoarthritis, that's a different person than the other BMI of 40 who really doesn't have those issues.
So you need to assess both. So what do we say to people who see ads on television for quick weight loss? They go to the supplement store, you know, they're swallowing the green coffee beans. What are we to say to them?
Yeah, this is a huge industry, you know, and a lot of it is really not regulated like we would regulate prescription medications. And it's true, you know, you can't open a magazine, you know, without seeing something about weight loss. We have to make sure that the drugs at least are not dangerous to our patients. And some of these so-called supplements or natural supplements have proven to cause stroke, heart attacks, renal failure, liver failure. Now, the weight loss, okay, so there will be someone who says, I took this pill and I've lost weight. Well, it's true that they've lost weight, but it might not have anything to do with whatever is in that pill, okay? So
if they take the pill and exercise more.
Right, or there are some where, you know, you take a pill, but then you're not allowed to eat after 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Or you have to do a 500-calorie liquid cleanse.
Right.
You know, so, again, you know, it's probably nothing to do with the ingredients of the pill, but they're definitely changing their behaviors. And in fact,
and they may not be aware that that's fueling the weight loss.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, when you look at legitimate weight loss drug studies, they're always randomized and they're always placebo controlled because you will see weight loss even in the placebo group.
Okay.
So you really, really have to be careful with these supplements. In terms of what I tell patients, you know, I kind of tell them, you know, what I've really just talked to you about. But if they feel that it is helping them, and if I feel that it won't harm them, I let it go.
So I'm going to ask you in a minute about where you think we're headed down the into the future, but I have a different question.
Okay.
Do you think a physician or a nurse who's overweight can be a person who works with someone who's trying to battle their own weight? Are they a good role model, or is it kind of share the struggle?
Either way. You know, patients may see you if you're overweight or be that, you know, you are struggling and you can identify. But even if your physician is thin, I think, you know, you can still provide the right kind of information for the patient. You know, an oncologist doesn't have to have cancer to treat someone with cancer. And that's the way I look at it.
So what do you think is coming down the road? I've heard talk of things like the equivalent of pacemakers that we see for the heart, something we might be able to use hormonally. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so the field is actually very exciting right now as we start to understand kind of the underpinnings of appetite. We're looking at, you know, different medications that will target specific appetite regulatory signals as opposed to just some sort of general medication that will rev up your system. What I do see coming, and it's actually the past couple of years, there have been medications that have come to the market, is more combination therapy. And, you know, in a sense, that's not really surprising, because if you look at diabetes or hypertension, you know, many other ailments, it's not usually one drug that's enough. You know, you may need a beta blocker together with a diuretic, together with an ACE inhibitor. And I think that's the way we have to look at obesity treatment. With regard to devices, certainly there is a push to try and come up with some sort of devices like, you know, electrical pacing of the stomach to try and get a sense of fullness when people eat. I think they're looking at that. We're looking at devices that act as like a vacuum, actually, to suck food out of the stomach as you
can't
eat.
Wait for that one. Right. Wow. Okay. In-N-Out.
Right.
Gives a new meaning to In-N-Out Burger.
Right. Right. There are also a lot of devices that are trying to mimic some aspects of bariatric surgery, where you don't actually have to use laparoscopic surgery. It's put in endoscopically. So either balloons or kind of tubes.
Right, you're trying to shrink space, so.
So either you're trying to shrink space or reroute the nutrients into such a direction where you may trigger hormonal changes to increase appetite. And surprisingly, some of those devices may be useful also for the treatment of diabetes, independent of weight loss or in conjunction with weight loss.
So it sounds like some things may be coming down the road to help. But tomorrow, if I'm one of the docs watching this, and I've got a patient that I want to help, what tips would you leave us with in terms of saying, how do I approach the subject? It sounded to me like even broaching the topic is something that you've got to do.
Right. So I think the way you broach the topic is very, very important. Because if you shame the patient, or if you try and scare the patient that if you don't lose weight, you're going to die, that probably puts either a lot of pressure on the patient or a lot of shame, and they might not want to go back for another visit with the doctor, particularly if they feel they've tried and they really haven't lost weight. So I think we need to be patient with our patients and try to help them come up with a program that's successful for them. One of the big problems is that I think most people would benefit from frequent visits with a dietitian. Unfortunately, that's not usually covered. Okay, so it can get very expensive. And doctors don't really have the time to see patients enough, you know. So recognizing that, we have to help the patients figure out what will work for them. And at times it might mean putting, you know, pen to paper and writing
the
prescription.
Diary.
Or also yes. Well, definitely keeping a diary is important. But
I meant a food diary, yeah.
Yes. We have patients keep food diaries all the time. There are online apps. There are phone apps that you can use. That's one of the most successful ways of losing weight.
There's
and also
that horrific Fitbit type thing that tells you didn't go anywhere.
Right. Number of steps, you know, lots of different technologies now that are actually coming up that hopefully will help. And I think doctors now also have to become educated with some of the new weight loss medications that are out there. You know, I think if we haven't used a medication when we are training to become doctors,
sort of fades back there a little bit.
Yeah, and we're just, you know, if we're less familiar with it, you know, we may be less apt to prescribe it.
So pay attention in this area. There are new things coming along. You need to be alert to them. Well, I want to thank you. This was very, very instructive, very, very useful. I appreciate your sharing your expertise and your time with us.
My pleasure.
And I'm Art Kaplan, and thanks for watching Close Up.